Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, good afternoon. But thank you for joining us for another episode of the Lady CEO Talk Radio Show. I am your host, DC Cole, with Silk Undress Lifestyle, the Lady CEO International Professional Women's Forum. We were created to celebrate the diversity of women in leadership, living the life they dreamt of, and achieving success along the way. Silk Undress is an international communication hub, creating a world without borders and connecting women to power, using an innovative platform to drive social and economic sustainable mechanisms to advance the status of women. I am so glad that you all have joined us this afternoon. We have so many wonderful things to talk about. For those who have been following us, you know that we are still flying high from the midterm elections when we had a record-breaking number of women to win their races. I am still so excited, and we are still in celebratory mode. We will be going around for a few of the attorney generals, investigators. I have two coming up in January, and we'll keep you posted on those other pertinent dates of those women who are celebrating. And so just stay tuned. We're just still so excited. And I want to send a special shout out to a few women that I knew personally that have gone through to win their race. And I want to start with Ms. Karen Yoho, Allison Pickard, Stephanie Smith, Queen, Leslie Lopez, Leanne Garcia, and we have so many more. I just want to call out a few. And then also I want to call out my friend Letitia James in New York, the Attorney General elect there. I'm just so excited. I mean, I could go on for another hour. Congratulating women who have run their races. But for now, stay tuned for some of the upcoming events. They will be posted on the website. And I want you to continue to join us and just really celebrating the legacy of these women, because their journey has really just begun. So thank you all who have come out to support us during this time. As we went around, we fundraised, we knocked on doors, we made the phone calls, we sent out the emails, we talked to our family and our friends, and this is what it needs, and this is what advocacy looks like. This is what grassroots movement is all about, to really get all of those people involved, to get our stakeholders to the table, and really to make a major difference. So thank you so very much. So without further ado, today we have a very exciting guest with us. We have Kim Weichel. She is actually Beyond Borders, One Woman's Journey of Courage, Passion, and Inspiration. I just really, really, really love Kim. Let me just tell you a little about Kim. We're going to bring her on, jump right into her story. So Kim is a social entrepreneur. She's a catalyst and nonprofit leader who has worked on the forefront of building bridges between cultures and peoples for over 25 years. She is a gender specialist who is a passionate advocate and champion for women's advancement, empowerment, and leadership. As the CEO of Peace by Peace, it's an international professional women's peace-building and leadership organization. She supported and mentored the global network of women peace builders in over 100 countries. She directed a national program in South Africa for over 5 years during the apartheid era that focused on building reconciliation, conducted peace building initiatives, and she also directed a wide range of international education programs at the World Affairs Council. So without further ado, there is so much more we can say about Kim. We want to dig right into her story and just have her just chat with us for a moment and talk about all the wonderful things that she's doing. Kim, hi, how are you? Are you there with us?
Very much so. Thank you, CC, for having me. I really appreciate it. I love what you're doing with this show.
Thank you so very much. We work really hard at it, and it comes from the encouragement of fearless women just as yourself. Okay, so we're going to jump right in, and Kim, we just have a few questions for you. We want you to sit back, relax, and, you know, and just be really authentic. We have an analogy here at Silk Undress, is that we love to really discuss women because we feel that women are like cars. And what I mean by that is that when we go purchase a car, we like the way it looks on the outside. We like the color of the car. You know, we like the wheels. We like the interior. It's leather. It's fabric. You know, but how many times do we ever open up the hood and say, wow, I like the way the battery is connected to the alternator. I like the way those wires work in there. We don't do that. That's how we are as women.
It's a great analogy.
Really good on the outside. We have our nice shoes on. We got a beautiful outfit on. We got our makeup on. But no one really knows what's underneath our hood. And so we're going to talk about your hood today. What's underneath the hood? So first question for you, Kim, where is home for you? Where are you from?
Well, you know, I can answer that on various levels, Cece. Firstly, we have a home in California. I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area. I love it there. I love the lifestyle there. But we also have a home here in the Washington, D.C. area, and we love it equally here. And we have a number of friends here. We're very rooted here. So I feel deeply connected in both places. So I'm sort of consider myself bi-coastal, perhaps. But beyond that, in terms of home, I've been thinking about what that really means for me. I feel home in the outdoors. I love skiing. I love hiking. I love biking. I love to go to the beach. But for me, also, home means peace within myself. You know, I'm at home within me wherever I am. So I have a both physical homes and I have spiritual homes, shall we say.
I love that. So what was your childhood like growing up? Were you always the feisty, fearless girl you are today?
Well, I was shyer growing up. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. I was very lucky to have a great family. My dad was an architect, and he would design these homes and schools and churches, and he would engage me and my mom particularly in designing these homes so that we could learn what it was he wanted to be able to provide for his clients. And I felt very included, and I learned a lot from him, and he was very supportive. And my mom was my role model. She was a professional pianist. She played in restaurants and in bars at nights and in a trio. And she modeled for me of doing what you love. And it was at a time in the 50s when most women didn't work or they were secretaries or teachers. Here she was a professional musician and artist. And it was wonderful to see her so happy in doing her passion, basically. And so I learned from that it's possible to both earn your money doing what you love, and that makes you a happier, healthier person, certainly. And so I was very lucky to have such this great family. I have a brother, still lives in California, and, you know, it was a really rich time of they introduced us to all kinds of things, and I felt very supported and loved by them. I think that's the most important thing.
That is wonderful. So you really talk about a really strong family foundation and the love of your parents, and your father and your mother have both demonstrated to you what it's like to be a builder, basically.
Yes.
Spiritually, physically, and emotionally. So that is really wonderful. So you're quite the advocate for women and peace building initiatives. So what is your ultimate goal?
Well, let me just say that ever since I've been young, I've had this, I don't know, deep connection with things international. I used to love poring over maps. I would love to study different cultures. Every Halloween, I dress up as someone from a different culture. I befriended exchange students at my school. I just had this, I don't know, this like this kernel within me from whenever I could remember to be engaged, learn about things international. And sadly, my family couldn't really afford to travel, so I didn't get to travel till I was 19 and I was an exchange student in Germany, which really ignited a passion for being engrossed in a different culture. I was there for a year. I'm still very close with my German family. And then one thing led to the next. My parents moved to Australia. I joined them after my year in Germany. I met my American husband there. We journeyed to Africa. And As I think you mentioned, we spent 5 years during the very challenging apartheid era in South Africa, and I was basically an anti-apartheid activist and was regional director of a national program working to build a post-apartheid society. We did a number of things, but it was in that space, when I was just 22, that I realized what I wanted to do was peace building and international peace building, because of this deep love I had had for different cultures, working with different cultures, but doing what I could as a peace builder to affect change. And that was a very profound time, needless to say, you know, living in Cape Town. I knew our phone was tapped. It was a very challenging time. But I knew that we needed to do what we could while we were there. And it was a very remarkable foundational experience in my career. So that helped shape my career goal. And my career has been, and basically, peace building, international development, international education, and as a citizen diplomat, which I can describe more, but, you know, as an individual, what can I do to bridge differences, of which we have way too many in this world? And so I think as a citizen diplomat, you can reach out and connect with others. And that's what I continue to do and love doing it.
Well, speaking of Nelson Mandela, I was actually scheduled to go to Johannesburg last month. Was it this month? Time has gone by so fast. For the 100 Years of Freedom, when they honored Nelson Mandela. What do you think about his legacy? And, it's 100 years. I mean, I just, you know, when you think about that, right?
Well, he, you know, someone that could have that ability and courage to be in prison for 27 years and then come out, not only not resentful, but be able to then lead his country away from apartheid. And, I mean, there are still certainly problems in South Africa, but what transformed that country was both his visionary leadership, the power of forgiveness, but a word that is my favorite word of all, which is Ubuntu, which is means I am me because you are you. And Nelson Mandela and Bishop Tutu and many others talked about it. We are all integrally linked, and that's what that spirit of Ubuntu. And because that spirit of Ubuntu existed in the communities, it was both Nelson Mandela's visionary leadership, obviously apartheid needed to end, but also that spirit of forgiveness in the communities that enabled that reconciliation to happen. And I think those are powerful lessons. When I look at other areas in conflict like the Middle East, I don't see that spirit of Ubuntu there, and I don't see a visionary leader right now. So I'm wondering what's going to create change there. But it was both of those things, that Mandela's ability and the respect for him, but it was also that Ubuntu, the together, that helped create change in South Africa.
Absolutely. I mean, despite all of his suffering, I mean, one of the hallmark traits and personality of Mandela was his undying ability to see the good in people in spite of what he went through. And he just wanted to free people, you know, of hate, you know. And so he just had this awesome innate ability to just, I don't know, to just really transform the world, basically. So congratulations to you for actually experiencing that. Ken, let's talk about this. So as you know, you and I are both, like, really hardcore advocates for women to reduce gender-based violence. And you lobbied, as I did, for the passage of the Violence Against Women Act. Have we made progress with all the women that are losing their lives to domestic violence that's in the headlines right now? Where can we go from here?
Well, that is a big topic, and it's one that, you know, haunts me anyways. Yes, in some ways we have made progress. We have more laws. We have this act. We have more awareness. But when you have such huge issues like sex trafficking, which is a multi-billion dollar industry, it's very hard to contain. You have labor trafficking, and women are so often the victims of this, of course. And so we have these enormous forces of so many different types of violence. And yet at the same time, when you look at the Me Too movement, you have so much harassment, sexual abuse that's been going on, that's been undercover, and now some of it's coming to light. Some developments are happening. We're also, with any development, you get backlash, and we're getting some backlash. But, you know, what it is doing is galvanizing a stronger movement. People are speaking out. So I think on the one hand, we're seeing positive trends. Well, you know, on the other, domestic violence is really rampant in every country. Rape is rampant in every country, including ours. And so we can't, as Americans, think, oh, over there somewhere. These things are happening here. Even sex trafficking is happening. And so we have to keep shining a light on it. It's criminal behavior. A lot of people say, well, it's cultural. No, it's not. It's not cultural. It's criminal. And so I think by all of our collective efforts, we are seeing some progress, and it gets discouraging at the same time. So, yes, there have been developments. Yes, we have more laws and policies. Are they being fully enacted? No. Yes, we need more shelters. We need more support. But really, it's also a cultural mindset, and we have to have an understanding in the cultures that women are equal. And so part of it is women getting more economically active and being able to earn an income, which then they're seen as an equal in the family. So it's a multi-layered, very complex issue that is deeply troubling. And yes, we're making progress, and yes, we have a huge amount more progress to be made, I guess is how to say that. And so we each need to do what we can. We each need to speak up when we see abuse.
Absolutely. And I work with a few judges, and one of the things I talk to my God is that we have a lot of advocacy. We have a lot of acts out there. We have a lot of legislation, but what we don't have is a strict rule of law. And that's what it really comes down to, is that I think that we need to do something on that side in terms of making it a very serious, and not a misdemeanor, but a very serious act against women. If a woman is violated, there shouldn't be just a protective order that doesn't do anything. A piece of paper does not protect women and their lives and their children. And so we're working on that as well. It really comes down to implementation of rule of law. And
well, it does, and mindset, changing attitudes. Mm-hmm. And I will say there are a number of great organizations, and I work with some of them, that specifically train and educate men. We need men as partners. So often it's women talking to women about women, and that we're only half the story. The story needs to be also about training and educating men, especially at a younger age, to know that domestic violence, rape, all these issues are not obviously not appropriate, but also not a way to resolve conflict. And so I think there's more training now. There needs to be a lot more than there is, certainly, but it's a multi-layered and long journey. And so I do feel hopeful, because here in D.C. I see the number of advocates, including you and me, and we're continuing to speak out, and we're continuing to push for better legislation, and we're continuing to get support. But again, it's kind of a small part of the bigger picture. So I imagine over time we'll see growing out more outspoken movements like the Me Too movement.
Absolutely. So we'd like to talk about the strength and resilience of women. Kim, share with us one of your most devastating times of your life, an event that made you question who you were, and something you felt that really threatened your purpose here on Earth.
That threatened my purpose. I'd have to give that some thought. I mean, certainly one of the things that's important is to be able to be firm in our belief systems, because we will get criticisms. As I say, there's been backlash from a lot of the work on reducing violence against women, because a lot of men think it's a zero-sum game. The more we gain, the more they lose, which is not the case at all. It's got to be, we see it as a win-win, because for me, engaging women is about a sustainable peace issue. Women are half the population. Women's leadership skills are critical, and have abilities like long-term thinking, collaboration, good at relationships, being nurturing, et cetera, many, many components that are needed in our society. And without women, Peace treaties don't last. Without women's voices, we don't get sustainable peace. So this is not a women's rights issue. It's a sustainable peace issue. It's a healthy society issue. So I guess when, you know, to kind of look at that question, it might be, you know, getting pushback from some of this and being able to stand firm in our beliefs. And I think that's critical when we do advocacy work. We need to know what the opposition is. We need to be able to have both the facts but also the stories, to be able to share both, to be believed to, and to come across as, you know, as credible, which we certainly are with our research, but not to shy away when we get opposition. And, you know, that's really important, to stand firm in our opinions.
Okay, so thank you so very much for that. But what was one of the most devastating times of your life, and how did you actually come back from that?
Well, I guess it was a personal situation when our house burned down. And our house burned down in California in 94, December 7th, 1994. You know, obviously it was extraordinarily devastating when we lost most everything. But in this case, it was it happened one evening when our then, I think he was 1.5-year-old son, was asleep in the house, and my husband and I, and we smelled it, and we got out just in time. So because it was a close call, I both felt some gratitude, obviously, that we were okay while I was dealing with the grief. And yet, over time, you know, dealing with insurance companies, trying to itemize everything in the house and rebuild, we had an opportunity to design a home. Our home was not of our choice at that point. We were just living there. But then it gave us a chance to design what it was we really wanted to have as our home. And so we kind of transformed from a very challenging situation. Of course, eventually you buy all those items again that, you know, one needs. But yet it was more about transforming from something that was such a difficult situation, not staying stuck as victim or poor me, but saying, okay, here we are. We need to now move forward in a way that's building on the ashes, literally. And so we were able to do that. And we still love that home. It's our home in California. But, you know, we certainly don't forget the lessons from that time. But I never, was stuck as a victim. It happens. We all have challenging situations in our lives, and we have to learn from them and learn how to move forward, certainly working through the grief, but then moving forward.
Wow, I'm sorry to hear about that. But, I mean, it was a great outcome, right? You was able
yes.
to, restore your home, rebuild it, and to refresh your life in a sense, and still continue on that legacy at the home in California. I have to go there one day. I love California.
It's a beautiful place.
So let me ask you, so you recently wrote a book. So tell us about that. What was your aha moment? When did you decide to actually?
Well, I've been lucky in my experiences in South Africa as a citizen diplomat with Russia and many other places to have had some remarkable experiences during some interesting times of history. And friends of mine knew about some of these experiences, and they said, Kim, you ought to write them down. You know, you've seen a side of history that some of us don't know. We'd like to know the backstory of this. So I listened, and I decided to start writing about those experiences. And once I started writing, I never stopped. And I wrote also about very deeply personal experiences, about losing my mother, about adopting an older child, about many key life experiences. And I realized what an extraordinary journey of self-exploration it was to be able to look back over one's life and to look at the choices one made, where those choices led. You have a chance to make sense out of things that maybe didn't make sense at the time. And it was really a very positive, rich experience for me. I realized how much wisdom I had gained, that I love to give back through the mentoring work that I do. And so it was a positive experience to be able to write this and self-publish it. And I give talks to people saying, We would love to hear your story. Everybody has a unique story. We have many of us have some similarities, but there are always, of course, uniquenesses, and we learn from each other. These are all part of the human experience. So I encourage everybody, I encourage your listeners to write their story, because we benefit. You know, how often do we go to a funeral and we learn about somebody's life that we wished we had known? Why wait till it's too late? Why not have the opportunity to share the essence of our life journey with others while we can? So I highly encourage people to do that.
Absolutely, and that is actually our motto. Everyone has a story. What is your story of glory? And so absolutely, oftentimes we don't know people's story. We see them for who they are, and we see them for what they do. We don't necessarily know who they are. So thank you for sharing that. Now, one of the things we like to do when we're closing out our interviews is that we understand that there is a lot that goes into being who we are today. It didn't start today. We learned a lot along the way. We're on this journey, and we're on a journey to somewhere. We don't know where that there is, but we're in a journey. And the most significant thing is the lessons we learn along the way. And so I would like you to lend your jewels of wisdom. This is the time for you to actually empower and inspire other women that are listening to this, that are thinking that, you know what, I love what she's doing. You know, how did she get there? And what can I do to get to that point in my life? What are your jewels of wisdom?
Well, thanks. I have various. One is to go for our dreams. I think so often women, we tend to be, we're busy, we're raising our families, we're working full time, and we tend to put our dreams on hold. And yet what I do in the third act workshops I lead for women 50 and older is saying, let's tap into some of those dreams that perhaps we were too busy to accomplish years ago. But we want everyone's dream to be fulfilled, because that benefits all of us. And there was this great quote by Howard Thurman that says, don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it, because what the world needs is people who have come alive. And so I love that quote. So one is, you know, go for your dreams. And the second is, you know, we're never too old. I'm over 50, I'll say, and a lot of people, well, oh, I'm too old to, you know, learn the piano. I'm too old to learn a language. No, we can't think that way. I think, you know, yes, sometimes we have health issues that limit some abilities, but nonetheless, we really have such opportunity, and now as we're living longer, we have better medical care. Some of us have some resources we've saved up over our career. Now is our turn, and we get to step forward, and I want to encourage women's voices just like you are, because we need more women's voices to shine in the society. So those would be some of the pearls of wisdom. There was also one that Marianne Williamson in her beautiful poem says, as we let our light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. So that means to me that by you stepping forward and having your radio show, it inspires other people. By my doing what I'm doing, everyone's doing what we're doing, we're letting our light shine, and that has a ripple effect to encourage and inspire and motivate others to do the same. So that, to me, is important. We all impact each other, and we all want to support each other to do our best.
Well, wonderfully said. Well, Kim, I want to thank you so very much for taking the time out of your amazingly beautiful, busy day to chat with us about all the wonderful things you're working on. And we only scratched the surface. But we want to thank you so very much for sharing your jewels of wisdom, for being open and honest with us about all that you have done, all that you will begin to work on. I want to encourage everyone to go out and purchase Kim's book, Beyond Borders, One Woman's Journey of Courage, Passion, and Inspiration. Kim, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find your book?
They can, thank you, Cece. They can find it on my website, which is www.kimweichel, spelled K-I-M-W-E-I-C-H-E-L. kimweichel.org, kimweichel.org. So that's where you can find the book. I'm actually working on another one now. It's going to be called Our Voices Matter, and it will be published sometime this spring. It'll also be listed on the website when it comes out.
Well, there you have it, Kim Weichel. That's her story. I am your host, Cece Cole, the CEO and founder of Silk and Dress Lifestyle of the Lady CEO International Professional Women's Forum magazine and talk radio show. So we want to thank all of you for being with us, for following us on this journey for 11 years. Please continue to go to our website to engage with us. Please also continue to come out to our events where we encourage you to get involved and become advocates for women. So thank you all so very much. Until the next time, be safe and be well.